So this is going to read from a different volume, Chaitanya Charitamrita, this morning, because it is the appearance day, Mara Gupta. From chapter 10 of Adi Lila, text 49, three verses and purports. This section of Adi Lila is a description of the various branches of any tree. In a very real sense, in a literal sense, this is being described. Murari Gupta, the 21st branch tree of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, a storehouse of love of Godhead. His great humility and meekness melted the heart of Lord Chaitanya. Report. Sri Murari Gupta wrote a book called Sri Chaitanya Dita. He belonged to a Vaidya physician family of Srihatta, the paternal home of Lord Chaitanya, and later became a resident of Navadvipa. He was among the elders of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Lord Chaitanya exhibited his Varaha form in the house of Mararita, as described in Chaitanya Bhagavat Madhulira Thirchar. When Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu exhibited his Mahaprakash form, he appeared before Murari Gupta as Lord Ramchandra. When Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and Nityananda Prabhu were sitting together in the house of Sri Thakur, Murari Gupta first offered his respects to Lord Chaitanya, and then to Sri Nityananda Prabhu. Nityananda Prabhu, however, was older than Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and therefore Lord Chaitanya remarked that Murari Gupta had violated social etiquette, for he should have first shown this to Nityananda Prabhu and then to him. In this way, by the grace of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Marika was informed about the position of Sri Nityananda Prabhu, and the next day he offered obeisance first to Lord Nityananda and then to Lord Chaitanya. Sri Chaitanya Prabhu gave chewed pan or betel nut to Murari Gupta. Once Marika offered foodstuffs to Lord Chaitanya that were cooked excessively, and the next day the Lord became sick and went to Murari Gupta for treatment. Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu accepted some water, fodder pot of Murari Gupta, and thus he was cured. The natural remedy for indigestion was to drink a little water, and since Murari Gupta was Ishan, he gave the Lord some drinking water and cured him. When Chaitanya Mahaprabhu appeared in the house of Asa Thakur in his Chaturbhuja Murti, Murari Gupta became his carrier in the form of Garuda, and in these pastimes of ecstasy the Lord then got his back. It was the desire of Murari Gupta to his body before the disappearance of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, but the Lord forbade him to do so. This is described in Srimad Bhagavat Madhulira chapter 20. When Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu one day appeared in ecstasy as the Varaha Murti, Murari Gupta offered him prayers. He was a great devotee of Lord Chandra, and his staunch devotion is vividly described in the Madhulira 15 chapter verses 137 through 157. First of three verses. Text number 50. Krishna Murari Gupta never accepted charity from friends, nor did he accept money from anyone. He practiced as a physician and maintained his family with his earnings. Report. It should be noted that a grihastha must not make his livelihood begging from anyone. Every householder in the higher castes should engage himself in his own occupational duty as a brahmana, kshatriya, or vaishya, but he should not be engaged in the service of others, for this is the duty of a Shudra. One should simply accept whatever means by his own profession. The engagements of Brahmana are Yajana, Yajana, Patana, Patana, Dana, and Pratigraha. A Brahmana should be a worshipper of Vishnu, and he should also instruct others how to worship him. A Kshatriya can become a landholder and earn his livelihood by levying taxes or collecting rent from tenants. A Vaishya can accept agriculture or general trade as an occupational. Since Marari Gupta was born in a physician's family, Vaidyavamsha, he practiced as a physician, and with whatever income he earned, he maintained his family. As stated in Srimad Bhagavatam, everyone should execute his occupational duty, and thus he should satisfy the Supreme Personality of Godhead. That is the faith. This system is called Daivi Varnasham. Bharata was an ideal grihasta, for he was a great devotee of Lord Ramchandra and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. But practicing as a physician, he maintained his family and at the same time satisfied Bhutanya to the best of his ability. This is the ideal of householder life. And text 51. As Murari Gupta treated his patients by his mercy, both their bodily and spiritual diseases subsided. Report. Murari Gupta could treat both bodily and spiritual disease because he was a physician by profession and a great devotee of the Lord in terms of spiritual advancement. This is an example of service to humanity. Everyone should know there are two kinds of diseases in human society. One disease, which is called adhyatmika, or material disease, pertains to the body. But the main disease is spiritual. The living entity is eternal, but somehow or other, when in contact with the material entity, he is subjected to the repetition of birth, death, old age, and disease. The physicians of the modern day should learn from Murari Gupta. Although modern philanthropic physicians open gigantic hospitals, there are no hospitals to cure the material disease, the spirit soul. The Krishna consciousness movement has taken up the mission curing this disease, but people are not very appreciative because they do not know what this disease is. A diseased person needs both proper medicine and a proper diet, and therefore the Krishna consciousness movement supplies materially stricken people with the medicine of chanting the holy name or the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra and the diet of prasad. There are hospitals and medical clinics to cure bodily diseases. There are no such hospitals to cure the material disease of the spiritual. The centers of the Krishna consciousness movement are the only established hospitals that can cure man of birth, death, old age, and disease. Comment or question? Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Sascha Rosham Adram Te Pradipam Shreyasam Pam Utena Bhoyasa Rajan Adgaina Yatamayam Samyacharosham Bhadram Te Pati Pratiam Shreyasam Param Shrutena Bhoyasa Rajan Adgadena Yatamaya Samyaccharocham Bhadamte Pratipam Shreyasam Param Putena Bhuyasarajan Agadena Tamayam Yatscharosham Bhadram Te Pradipam Shreyasam Param Shrutena Bhuyasaraja Agadena Yatamayam. Hey to you, Pratipam, enemy, Shreyasam, of all goodness, Param, the foremost, Shrutena, by hearing, Bhuyasa, constantly, Rajan, my dear king, Agadena, by medicinal treatment, Yata, as, Amayam, disease. Translation, my dear king, just consider what I have said to you, which will act as medicinal treatment upon disease. Control your anger, for anger is the foremost enemy on the path of spiritual realization. I wish all good fortune for you. Please follow my instructions. Report by Srila Prabhupada. Dhruva Maharaj was a liberated soul, and actually he was not angry with anyone. But because he was the ruler, it was his duty to become angry for some time in order to keep law and order in the state. His brother, Uttama, was without fault, yet he was killed by one of the yakshas. It was the duty of Dhruva Maharaj to kill the offender, life for life, because Dhruva was the king. When the challenge came, Dhruva Maharaj fought vehemently and punished the yaksha sufficiently. But anger is such that if one increases it, it increases unlimitedly. In order that Dhruva Maharaj's kingly anger not exceed the limit, Manu was kind enough to check his grandson. Dhruva Maharaj could understand the purpose of his grandfather, and he immediately stopped the fighting. The words Shrutena Bhuyasa, by constantly hearing, are very important in this verse. By constantly hearing about devotional service, one can check the force of anger, which is detrimental to the process of devotional service. Srila Parikshit Maharaj said that the constant hearing of the pastimes of the Lord is the panacea for all material diseases. Everyone, therefore, should hear about the Supreme Personality of Godhead constantly. By hearing, one can always remain in equilibrium, and thus his progress in spiritual life will not be hampered. Dhruva Maharaj became angry with the miscreants. Dhruva Maharaj's becoming angry with the miscreants was quite appropriate. There's a short story in this connection about a snake who became a devotee upon the instruction of Narada, who instructed him not to bite anymore. Since ordinarily a snake's business is to fatally bite other living entities, as a devotee, he was forbidden to do so. Unfortunately, people took advantage of this non-violence on the part of the snake, especially the children, who began to throw stones at him. He did not bite anyone, however, because it was the instruction of his spiritual master. After a while, when the snake met his spiritual master, Narada, he complained, "I have given up the bad habit of biting innocent living entities, but they are mistreating me by throwing stones at me." Upon hearing this, Narada Muni instructed him, "Don't bite, but do not forget to expand your hood as if you are going to bite, then they will go away." Similarly, a devotee is always non-violent. He is qualified with all good characteristics, but in the common world, when there is mischief made by others, we should not forget to become angry, at least for the time being, in order to drive away the miscreants. Verse has nice instruction. Beginning with a nice analogy, comparing good instruction to medicine. Actually, it is more than an analogy, because behind, as Prabhupada is indicating here, behind every material disease, there's a spiritual disease. Behind every material problem, there's a spiritual problem. Just as the verse is being quoted from the Bhagavatam, Parikshit Maharaj has glorified the pastimes, the recitation of the pastimes of Lord Krishna, as being the medicine that will cure all material diseases. The ultimate material disease is that we have this body to begin with. For the soul, this body is a foreign substance. There's so many things that we have to do to keep body and soul together. But as far as the soul is concerned, for example, the soul doesn't have to eat. The soul doesn't have to become tired and take rest, especially during Bhagavatam class. The soul doesn't have to do these things at all. The soul is described very briefly in Bhagavad Gita. The soul is self-luminous, brilliant, effulgent, like the sun. Prabhupada described this way about the devotees, that there used to be, he would speak in this way, there used to be dirty hippies. I'm saying exactly like that. Some of his disciples were not very clean and had become a little haggardly. But by becoming devotees, they became bright-faced. No, that's a bright-faced luster. Natural luster is there within a devotee. In fact, we can sometimes notice this within the features of a devotee, if they're having their little spiritual battles and difficulties, they begin to lose their luster. We sometimes see this. And you know, this devotee's having a hard time. But for devotees who are so much absorbed very nicely in their service and their chanting, their sadhana, and their devotional life, there's a natural luster that's there that you just don't find elsewhere. The soul is self-luminous. So the covering that his body places over the soul is, it's foreign to the soul. It's such an, it's in many ways just a big impediment. It just gets in the way. At the same time, information is, there's a nice contrast or comparison being made to, even though something is of this material world, it can have its proper utilization in service to Krishna. And one of the examples of this, actually it's even very educational, because it's an extreme example, the example of anger. Here Swayambhuva Manu is letting his grandson have it. Don't become angry excessively. But Prabhupada is speaking in defense of Guru Maharaj, on the other hand, as we were hearing in classes the last couple of days, that Dhruva was all angry because it was his brother. Due to bodily attachment, due to identification with family, identification with the body, Dhruva had become excessively angry due to his attachment to material identification. But here Prabhupada is speaking in Dhruva's behalf. Actually, his brother was faultless. He had done no wrong, and yet he had been killed. So even if his brother, if it had not been his brother, but any of the citizens of the state, it would have been Dhruva's duty as king. They didn't have this elaborate judicial system like we have today, where some murderer can go scot-free after a few months in jail. This goes on. Spending a few years in jail, and then he goes out to perform his next murder. Pleading insanity, or whatever his program. They didn't have a judicial system in that same way. The king was the executive head and the judicial head. And it was the king's duty, therefore. It was very clear the wrong that had been done. Didn't have to receive testimony or do any investigation. It was very clear. The Yakshas had killed his brother. And immediately, for the protection of the state, it was his duty to become angry. So here's a big difference. The anger that Dhruva Maharaj was exhibiting in this case, and the anger of a conditioned soul. In Dhruva Maharaj's case, or in the case of someone who's exhibiting anger properly, that anger should be controlled. As opposed to the anger of a conditioned soul, where the conditioned soul is completely controlled by that anger. Out of control, as Prabhupada is citing here in the purport. Anger is one of those things that if increased, it has the tendency to increase unlimitedly. If one becomes angry, not in a proper Krishna conscious manner, then that anger has a tendency to just to overwhelm us. We again become conditioned by that anger. We fall back down into the material platform, and the material energy completely pushes us around here and there in the form of anger. To the point where one becomes angry at, for no cause. Some completely unrelated thing passes our vision, comes in the purview of our senses, and we become angry at that thing, or that person, or that incident. Completely unrelated. That's Maya. That's where anger has controlled and conditioned the living, where the material energy is now in control of the living entity. That kind of anger is not to be entered into by a devotee. However, a kshatriya has that duty to exhibit anger. Must, for the protection of society, where there is miscreant, and Prabhupada is saying this in a general way, not specifically just for the within the Daivi Varnashram system, that there must be those persons who are kshatriya-like, and those kshatriya-like persons must exhibit anger. Prabhupada doesn't qualify in that way. He says, generally, a devotee is always non-violent, semicolon. He is qualified with all good characteristics. Next sentence. But, in the common world, when there is mischief made by others, he should not forget to become angry, at least for the time being. Don't forget. In other words, it's something that you should, that some service that you render out of duty to Krishna. Don't forget to render your duty. When there is miscreant, when there is mischief, for a little time, under the appropriate circumstance, anger must be there, dutifully. Including the purport, in order to drive away the miscreants. This doesn't mean that the anger is going to correct the consciousness of the miscreant. There are several descriptions of this. The converse of proper anger found within Bhagavad Gita. One place is where Krishna describes, or it is described, that anger, when it's improperly being manifest within an individual, it pollutes the whole body. So there's one thing also that pervades the whole body, and what is that? Consciousness. Consciousness permeates the whole body. So material energy, when the material energy acts upon the living entity, it acts upon, it conditions the consciousness of that living entity. Therefore, as consciousness permeates, so also anger, when it's raging out of control, contaminates not just the mind, but also your senses, your whole body. Your senses cannot perceive properly when in a state of uncontrolled anger. That's not the case when there is controlled anger, or anger that is being rendered properly out of devotion, out of duty to Krishna. And it's interesting to note this particular point. The emphasis that Prabhupada is making here in this purport, as well as in the verse, because this is the instruction that Swami Vivekananda was giving to Dhruva. Continue with this hearing process. Swami Vivekananda was giving Dhruva the opportunity to hear because this hearing purifies consciousness. And hearing is part of the duty of Vaishnavas. Even in, imagine this circumstance, if it were to be set up in the, somewhere on the planet, where a whole raging battle is going on, and in comes Swami Vivekananda to give some nice spiritual instruction to Dhruva, who's single-handedly fighting against, very ferociously, Prabhupada describes vehemently, gets a tap on the shoulder, and, by the way, Dhruva Maharaj, don't forget that you should behave like a Vaishnava. So hearing is part of duty. And from that hearing, also practical devotional service follows. Advice that Krishna gives to Arjuna is very similar. It's just a further extension of that point of hearing. And that is, Krishna's advice to Arjuna is to tolerate anger, lust and anger and greed. In other words, they're of this body, they're not of the soul. This contaminating anger that is born of the soul's contact with the mode of passion. When the soul comes in contact with the mode of passion, that is called lust. And that lust is later transformed into wrath. However, this lust in its original state, before consciousness becomes contaminated, lust is the natural love of God that all living entities have for the personality of Godhead. But when the soul comes in contact with passion, that changes. Consciousness becomes contaminated in that way. So, Krishna's advice to Arjuna is to tolerate. That's one side of the coin. So this is common advice. When some situation arises that makes you very angry, you should be detached. Instead of succumbing or surrendering to that anger, you should tolerate it. But there's a higher principle that's also expressed on the other side of the coin. And that higher principle is described that by the performance of one's duty, one can check the force of lust and anger. By regulated devotional life, when duties are there to be performed, for any devotee in our ISKCON society has some duty to perform, either that or there's something that's wrong. Devotee, by the structure that Prabhupada has given us, this international society of devotees, we all have some duty to perform. By continuing steadfastly to perform that duty, regardless of what the material energy is doing, the performance of devotional service can go on. The one who goes on steadfastly rendering one's duty, this is the recommendation that Krishna is giving, and Prabhupada reiterates further in Bhagavad Gita, for curbing lust and anger. But it equally, those are two, the statements parallel one another. The advice that Swami Ramana was given is to go on hearing. Shrutena, Bhuyasa, Rajan, O King. Go on regularly hearing about the glorification. Hearing is in the middle of a battle. Go on with the regular hearing of the activities of the personality of Godhead. For by this regular hearing, one will then become steadfast in one's devotion and one's rendering of one's duty to Krishna. When you're rendering your duty to Krishna, this lust and anger, they're just another interface. It's another thing like this body. It just gets in the way. It's another thing that's born of the modes of material nature. It is foreign to the soul. If the soul is identifying, here's the absolute position for a devotee. A devotee is identifying so much with their constitutional position as a servant of Krishna, and all this other business is just an interference. There's no time for it. There's no allowance in one's attentiveness for these different sources of pride and anger and arrogance and greed and lust and so forth. It just doesn't have anything to do with my constitutional position of serving Krishna, so I don't care for it. I will tolerate it. It will pass in due course of time, like everything else is temporary in this world. I simply have to go on rendering my service to Krishna. That's all I know, because that's my identity eternally. So what we externally call tolerance of these botherations is another way of it's another way of looking at devotion to Krishna. As Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, that which is called renunciation is the same as yoga, or linking oneself with the Supreme. This real stage of detachment, the soul's detachment from all material considerations, is really a matter of one's being properly linked with God. One who's properly linked with God is detached from those things that others consider to be so important of this world. And what is that connection with the personality of Godhead? It is our service. One's duty. So go on with your prescribed duties when there is some situation where an anger arises. Now here's a finer adjustment that's being made by Swami Ramana, telling Dhruva Maharaj, yes, you're king, but it's not your duty to become excessively angry. The punishment has been met, finished. Finished with your anger. Finished with your display of anger. And again, because Dhruva was practiced in the process of hearing, when an instruction came, which was at a very delicate point, as Prabhupada is describing, anger is one of those things that when it becomes excessive, there's no end to it. But because he was practiced in hearing regularly, when that time came for the proper instruction, immediately his anger subsided. His anger was brought under control. That's the position of a liberated soul. So things of this world can be used in God's service. Prabhupada describes in this way, within Bhagavad Gita, that Tato Brahma Jigyasa, everything is coming from the personality of Godhead. This is from Vedanta Sutra. Therefore, this anger is also coming from the personality of Godhead. Because the thing is coming from God, then therefore it has its proper utilization. The example Prabhupada gives is that of Hanuman. Hanuman also became angry, but properly. He performed his duty, giving information to Sita, please don't do anything drastic, Ramchandra is going to come and rescue you. his way out of the city of Lanka, he set the whole place on fire, showing his anger. That anger is proper anger. Or we also hear instruction in Nectar Devotion, for example, where there is blasphemy of a devotee or blasphemy of a personality Godhead. It is proper to demonstrate some anger. Control. As Hanuman was also controlled, and that kind of anger is very powerful, far more powerful than the foolish kind of anger that some attached materialistic person demonstrates when their desires for sense gratification are frustrated. This is also described in Bhagavad Gita, how anger comes by contemplation of the object of the senses, one develops attachment for them, and so on. And anger comes in when those desires and attachments are frustrated. That's an embarrassing situation for the soul, to be caught up in that kind of anger. But the anger of devotion has its proper utilization for the service of Krishna, and it is fitting conduct in the right circumstance only within the life of a liberated soul, within the life of a devotee. So therefore, the standard of Vaishnava is very high standard. One has to have proper knowledge, not just be non-violent in a material sense of non-violent. Non-violence is also properly performed when one becomes angry in the right circumstance. So therefore one has to have proper knowledge, one has to be sense controlled, to know when to perform what is prescribed and when to stop performing what is prescribed and go on to the next duty that one has to perform, without any disturbance, without any interruption, without any delay. Simply for the pleasure of Krishna. So Prabhupada writes in this way that the attitude of devotion, that every living entity has for God, when that becomes polluted or contaminated, that is where all this other mess begins. And it can be properly transformed again. That lust can be again transformed into love. And in a condition of love, all varieties of activity that are all coming from God, they can be performed by the devotee of the Lord. So we have 5 minutes. We can answer some questions if there are. For the devotees in the kitchen, the question was, where do you draw the line between tolerance and becoming angry on behalf of the Lord? The standards are there when it is appropriate to become angry on behalf of the Lord, and otherwise, be tolerant. For someone who is in an administrative position within the temple, there's some misconduct within the temple. The purport of this class is not that everybody in the brahmachari ashram, if they see somebody dropping a Kleenex on the floor instead of in a basket, they should go and all yell at him in unison. There's a time and place judgment. Generally speaking, the administrators of the temple have that as their principal duty. It is their duty to demonstrate from time to time, just like I heard somebody getting the demonstration this morning at about 3:45, some proper demonstration of anger when there wasn't proper respect being exhibited. But that's not for everybody within the temple to make that kind of judgment. So when it is your duty to act as a in some administrative way, then you can do that within the jurisdiction of the temple, and some finer discretion has to be demonstrated there. But the devotees in general But the points are, if there's some severe mischief, if someone comes running in the front door, brandishing some weapon, or intoxicated, smashing into the wall and behaving like a lunatic, we could say, well, we'll just wait for Gunadharmaraj to show up. He's out of town right now, but he'll be back in a few days. And he's, after all, he's the temple administrator. So if there's some mischief and there's some requirement from some needed action, then one should do. Practically, for your spiritual protection in all circumstances, where there is blasphemy of devotees and blasphemy of the Lord, one should demonstrate that anger immediately. One should not just sit and quietly tolerate it. That will be to your spiritual loss if you do that. Generally speaking, another rule of thumb is, if you're not really certain, better to be tolerant.
Tushpuram, insatiable. Dumba, pride. Mana, false prestige. Mada anvita, absorbed in conceit. Mohat, by illusion. Grihitva, taking. Asat, non-permanent. Grahan, things. Pravartante, flourish. Asuchi, unclean. Vrata, avowed. Translation. The demoniac, taking shelter of insatiable lust, pride, and false prestige, and being thus illusioned, are always sworn to unclean work attracted by the impermanent. We need some air in here, but not freezing cold. Purport. The demoniac mentality is described here. The demon's lust is never satiated. They will go on increasing and increasing their insatiable desires for material enjoyment. Although they are always full of anxieties on account of accepting non-permanent things, they still continue to engage in such activities out of illusion. They have no knowledge and cannot tell that they are heading the wrong way. Accepting non-permanent things, such demoniac people create their own god, create their own hymns, and chant accordingly. The result is that they become more and more attracted to two things: sex enjoyment and accumulation of material wealth. The word asuchi brata, unclean vow, is very significant in this connection. Such demoniac people are only attracted by wine, women, gambling, and meat eating. Those are their asuchi, unclean habits. Induced by pride and false prestige, they create some principles of religion which are not approved by the Vedic injunctions. Although such demoniac people are most abominable in the world, still by artificial means, the world creates a false honor for them. Although they are gliding toward hell, they consider themselves very much advanced. Don't keep it too much open. Everybody's going to freeze to death. Yeah. Kama mashachitushpuram dambamana madanvita mohadvihit vasadgrahan pravartante shuchi prata. The demoniac, taking shelter of insatiable lust, pride, and false prestige, and being thus illusioned, are always sworn to unclean work attracted by the impermanent. This verse is following this very special verse in Bhagavad Gita, which explains about the way the demons are thinking. It says here in two verses before, Asacham apratishtam te jagadahuranishwaram aparasparam sambhutam kimanyat kamahaitukam. The demons, they say, that this world is unreal, that there is no foundation, that there is no God in control. It is produced of sex desire and has no other cause than lust. In the next verse, following such conclusions, the demoniac, is this open? They're too hot or too cold. The demoniac, who are lost to themselves and who have no intelligence, engage in unbeneficial, horrible works meant to destroy the world. Yeah. These are the two verses before. So we can start. They say asatyam, asatyam. There's no truth in this world. All of these demoniac philosophers today always start off with that conclusion that this world is unreal. There's no truth to it. It is simply illusion, and one should just somehow or another get himself out of that. It's funny that they think of us in that way. When these demoniac persons make propaganda against the Hare Krishna movement, they always start off by saying that the Hare Krishnas think that everything is illusion. Therefore, one should have nothing to do with this world. And therefore, he should not work or do anything practical. They always start off by saying that about us, which is really funny. Because this is exactly what we don't say. We don't say it doesn't exist. We say it does exist, definitely. It's the Mayavadis who say it doesn't exist. And the Mayavadis in the form of existentialists, they also say it doesn't exist. There are other forms of Mayavadis, or just plain, very esoteric people. They all say in their own different way that this isn't really here, Buddhists especially. It's all just illusion. And when you become realized, you will see that it's actually nothing. This is the way they are seeing. And the scientists also, in one sense, they are saying asatyam, unreal, in the sense that what we see here is not actual reality of the existence. We see here, for instance, a living body, it seems to be real. Living body. But actually, it's just actually the chemicals all put together which give the illusion of life. Or it is a life, but actually it's not really life, because if you take it in its small little parts, it's just chemicals. Therefore, everything everywhere is just atoms, all moving about in their various ways, or whatever they do. Everything's just atoms. Therefore, all these various forms and everything, these are just temporary combinations put together by chance. And they have no reality, because they will be split up again by chance in the future. This body, which looks so nice now, will in the future become piles of atoms again, and they will turn into different things. They'll plant you somewhere in the ground and you'll grow some grass over your head. Something like that. Apratishtam, without foundation. Anishwaram, there's no control. There's no foundation, there's no basis, there's no controller. It's all chance. Just by chance everything's happening. By chance atoms come together. By chance atoms go apart. By chance things are all going on in a big twirling network of existence. There's no reality there of a foundation upon which things are based. It's all chance. Prabhupada always used to make the joke. By chance a man saw a woman, and by chance they became lusty. And by chance they had sex, and by chance a child was produced. There's no chance. There's no chance in any part of that. All of it is strict principle. It always happens that way. But they say, no, by chance it happened. By chance these atoms came together, and by chance they produced certain bodies and forms, and by chance these bodies and forms became lusty and had sex. All by chance. Somehow it's happening. But it's always happening in the same way. Not only that, it's happening the same way that the scientists are saying the same thing since time immemorial. This version of atomic theory and all that nonsense has nothing to do with modern time. Just simply modern time. This has been going on since a long time. The philosopher Kanada. There are many philosophers of the six hexagonal school of the Vedanta, Vedantic schools. So this Kanada was one of them. He was atheistic. He said, there is only atoms and nothing else. Everything is atoms. And if you take heat, you can make atoms do different things. You can make molecules do different things. He spoke of this 5,000 years ago, 6,000 years ago. Tanada. And he spoke of the fact that if you take the atoms and split them up, you'll make big explosions. Huh? Long, long time ago, he spoke on each and every aspect of atomic theory. He was the one who said, atomic time is measured in the time it takes one atom to move its own dimension, to move past its own dimension, to move one space of its own self. It's like if you moved the distance of your body up, that would be the speed at which you moved in that atomic sense. You take one atom, and the time it takes one atom to move its own width, this is the unit of atomic time. This he said thousands of years ago. This is nowadays big stuff. You know, it's the basis principle upon which all of the nonsense, demoniac things are going on. And thousands of years ago, it was just what he was saying. Atomic knowledge was there. No problem. Atheistic business, no problem. And there have been plenty before Kanada. There were plenty before the modern man scientists, and plenty before Kanada, and plenty before him, and plenty before him, and plenty before him. And all these civilizations have come and gone, probably because they misused the same energies that they're misusing today. And civilization rises, calls itself advanced, everybody applauds themselves very nicely, dresses themselves up very nicely with their various festive uniforms. It changes in each civilization. The modern one uses this completely wretched system of taking a tie and jamming it into the neck and wearing 10 layers of coats. And previous civilizations used other forms of vestments and drapes and shawls and all things. But everybody had their sophisticated, good-looking men who were atheistic rascals who accepted that everything was chemicals and everything was atoms, and at the end they blew themselves up, or because they were so sinful they got destroyed. Nothing new. All the same, over and over again, over and over again, going on throughout eternal time. Yeah. And they all have the same philosophy. Otherwise, how is it Krishna is talking about the modern scientists, the modern rascals, the modern atheists, the modern religionists in Bhagavad Gita 5,000 years ago? Because there's nothing new about them. Demons and rascals are always there. And they all say the same thing. They're all brainwashed. They're all a bunch of robots. Like a bunch of zombies, they simply speak the same nonsense all the time, flapping their mouths, repeating the same words over and over again. No brains. There is no God, there is no soul, it is all atoms. All you fellows, you Hare Krishnas, you are all brainwashed. I am free, I watch TV. This has been going on since time immemorial. Everybody simply mouthing the same garbage and calling it sophisticated talk. And then when somebody speaks like that, everybody applauds. Bravo, bravo, well spoken, well spoken. Then he says, yes. I am so wonderful, I am so great, I am so learned, I am such a scholar. Bow down before me, you peons of little intelligence. This way, it goes on, and on, and on, and on. It doesn't stop. Everybody knows, same thing. And then what happens? They die in their sophisticated dress, and they're buried in their sophisticated dress, in a very beautiful coffin, everybody crying. Then they throw some dirt on them. Those chemicals are now useless chemicals, and they throw some dirt on the chemicals, and the chemicals become chemicals, and this is it, the end. Krishna even spoke about that. He predicted that somewhere else in the Bhagavad Gita. He said, what is that? Avyakta dini madjani? Something more about that. Krishna is stating that in the beginning, everything is unmanifested. In the middle, it manifests for some time. And at the end, it's unmanifested again. So why lament? If you kill anybody, you are killed. By your philosophy that it's all chemicals, even you accept that, you're a scientist. Yeah. It's not a new philosophy that you're just a bunch of chemicals. Krishna is speaking about it 5,000 years ago. Even you accept you're just a pile of chemicals, and why are you lamenting that I might want to kill you? Pile of chemicals. Yeah? Big, big scientist, you put a gun on his head and say, you're just a pile of chemicals anyway, scientist. If I pull the trigger or not, what's the difference? It's just a pile of chemicals in this condition, a pile of chemicals in that condition, plus a bullet. So what's the problem? Yeah. But he's the first one to start running and screaming. No, no, no. Murderer. Horrible. Such a fool. By his own philosophy, there's no difference, because in the beginning I was in one state, in the end I will be in the same state. So there's no loss. Law of conservation of energy and matter is there. There's no loss, no problem. Whether you're living or you're dead, what's the difference? Yeah. And there was this existentialist who thought that way too and drove himself right off a cliff. What's the difference? Living, dead, any existence is all the same. It's all one. Yeah. This way, Mayavadis have been destroying the earth by making people think they can do whatever they like, whenever they like, without any law, without any regulation, without any love or with emotion or heart or anything. Therefore, slaughter animals and eat them. If it tastes good, do it. Who cares? If you want to have fun, make an atom bomb and blow everybody up. What's the difference? Nowadays, the whole world is upset about these things and disturbed and worried and in anxiety about these things. But nobody cares. Nobody cares. Isn't it amazing? The whole world, everybody's worried about being blown up. But none of the leaders care. They don't care. They argue about it back and forth, and at the end they decide, yeah, let's blow everybody up. Nobody cares. Why? They're just demons. They don't care about anything. They care about their sex life. As long as they can have sex life in their bomb shelter, they don't care. You can blow up everybody. I got my secretaries. This is what politicians are thinking. Thinking, yeah, it's real nice down here. Huh? I'll bring so many secretaries, hire some nice, young, beautiful ones, and we'll have our bomb shelter down there, and then we'll just wait a couple of months. Great. There's something lying. This is basically how they think. As long as they can maintain their sex life, as long as they can maintain their intoxication, they don't care who they kill, how they kill, what they do. They don't care. Because they're practiced, you see. They've been killing animals like that for centuries. Killing cows in all kinds of horrible ways. Smashing them on the head with a sledgehammer. Slitting their throats and waiting till all the blood runs out. Because it's religious. They're practiced. The demons are practiced. They've had a lot of practice at slaughtering, pain-giving, murdering, horrible things. Because they are just demons. Demons are demons. And therefore they have to be dealt like demons, dealt with like demons. You have to deal with them in their own way. Yeah. This is what Krishna does, time and time again. When there are too many demons, he comes. He comes into this world. Somehow, maybe we don't know exactly how he's doing that. Sometimes he appears as himself. Sometimes he appears in one of his various forms. And sometimes he appears in a way in which we can't even see. And he's always appearing as eternal time. He's always appearing as eternal time. And the time factor is sufficiently strong to finish off all the demons. No matter how strong they are and how much sex life they have, they can't conquer time and they're going to die. And not only that, but one funny thing about demons is they always end up killing themselves. They kill themselves or kill each other. Killing themselves means they kill each other. Yeah. Demons are like that. Just like when they had this churning of the Mandra Mountain on the back of the incarnation of the tortoise, Krishna's incarnation. There's many incarnations of Krishna involved in that pastime of churning the milk ocean. The incarnation of the Lord was sitting on top of the mountain, incarnation of the Lord was the resting place of the mountain, and incarnation of the Lord brought out the nectar which was produced from the churning of the ocean. Yeah. So anyway, the demigods and demons were busy churning the milk ocean. And the demons, when they finally, at the end, got the pot of nectar, the demigods didn't even worry too much about the fact that the demons got the pot of nectar, because immediately the demons couldn't agree on who was going to take it first. They all started fighting amongst each other so much that they couldn't come to a conclusion. One was grabbing it, and the other was beating him and grabbing it, and the other was beating him and grabbing it, and it was a big free-for-all and a riot. Therefore, Mohini Murti could very nicely walk in. Yeah. Beautiful incarnation of the Lord, number four, in this pastime. Krishna appearing as the most beautiful, gorgeous woman in the history of all creation. When Krishna wants to bewilder by yoga maya, there's no problem, because he's the one bewildering everybody by maya anyway. And he appeared as the most gorgeous woman in the history of creation. And immediately the demons, all their jaws just dropped to the floor. Because this is all they care about. Sex life. They didn't care about the nectar which they just spent days and days churning for. They don't care. They thought, look at that. We don't need the nectar. There's the nectar. Well, they were right, actually. Krishna is the nectar. So then they said, oh, beautiful young lady. We have this problem here with the nectar. So you can distribute it to us in any way you like. And Mohini Murti said, okay, sure. But don't be upset with me when I do it. They said, no, we can never be upset with anything you do. And then she immediately gave it to all the demigods. That's fantastic. Krishna has such a sense of humor. He does things in such a perfect way. He just knew the psychology of those demons backwards and forwards. It's like Vishnu told her. First the demigods had the tail. First the demigods had the head of this demon Vasuki. Not demon Vasuki, snake Vasuki. Vasuki is a big snake, he's the king of the snakes. So they had to churn the mountain with something. And there wasn't any rope in the whole creation big enough to do it. So they took Vasuki, the king of the serpents, and the demigods had the head. And the demons had the tail. Yeah? So then the demons were thinking, well, what is this? The demigods have the head and we have the tail. We want the head. And Vishnu said, very good, give them the head. So demigods, they took the head on purpose because they knew the head was the bad part of Vasuki to have. See, because when you're churning with Vasuki, then it causes big indigestion in him. And then he starts belching out fire like anything. So the demigods, when they were, you know, they knew, well, we'll take the head, and then the demons will get envious, and then we'll pretend to surrender, and then we'll get the tail, and they'll all get burnt. And that's exactly what happened. Vishnu, Lord Krishna, and Lord Vishnu is saying, so intelligent, beyond intelligent, just unlimited knowledge, and with such a sense of humor. Yeah? Everything done so perfectly everywhere throughout this entire creation. Everything is perfect. All up and down the whole creation, everything is perfect and absolute. Yeah? And the demons, they don't know this. They're always trying to somehow or another find out how there's this imperfection they can exploit, that imperfection. They think the perfection is to just have sex all the time, non-stop, day and night. Agitate the genital, day and night. This is life. And they think this is perfect, and they don't know that doing this, what it does, is it destroys everything. Because the demons, they're always so agitated and frustrated and lusty that, you know what happens after lust becomes frustration. After so much desire, one becomes frustrated, and then he becomes angry, and the demons start pounding each other and beating each other and throwing bombs at each other and blowing everybody up. Why? Because they're agitated. That's all. And they can't satisfy their agitation. They thought, yes, if we have Dr. Mueller's in Germany, they have Dr. Mueller's sex shops everywhere. Everywhere, sex shops. If we have sex shops everywhere, great. Huh? And you can have sex with anybody, anywhere, at any time. Fantastic. Then we'll be happy. Huh? This is happiness. But that, what is happening? They're becoming frustrated and frustrated and frustrated, and they can't enjoy anymore, and they're becoming angry, and they're saying, that's the cause, that's the cause, that's the cause, and I'm going to smash it. And then the other side is going, he's the cause, and that's the cause, and then they smash him. And they end up blowing everybody up. Simply because of agitation. Agitation. Just so agitated, just poof, destruction. Passion comes to ignorance. That is the nature of this world. Passion comes to ignorance. no other cause than lust. And therefore, following such conclusions, these demoniac persons, who are lost to themselves and have no intelligence, because what is the first thing that gets lost when lust is there? Intelligence. Finished. As soon as one becomes lusty, his intelligence becomes clouded over. He can no longer see anymore. He can no longer see straight anymore. He doesn't understand anything anymore. He becomes lost, like some madman. Huh? Just like the bulls. Not the oxes, the bulls, the real ones. We have one bull in Germany. And this one devotee has been every day giving the food to the bull. Now we ought to learn that this is a good person, right? You think. If animal, you feed him every day, he gets in his head, this is a good person, he feeds me, he's my friend, right? No, wrong. Because this bull is so lusty that whenever this devotee would take the oxes down to the training field where he would train them, this bull was thinking, he's taking them to have sex with the cows. And he doesn't take me. He never takes me. And therefore, every time he goes, and he's pulling the ground like this, and shaking his head like this. And then the devotee came in to take the oxes down to have to, and then he went and bashed the devotee as hard as he could, just flew him over the fence. And he was all leg, all bruised, everything everywhere, all bruised. Why? He's so envious that the oxes were going to get trained in the ring. Because all he could think of is sex life. That's all these bulls think of. Therefore, we make them oxes, you see, to save ourselves. That's what lust does. It just destroys everything. No intelligence. Eh? Even the person who will help you, you will kill for sex life. This is going on. They engage these persons, such persons as we just described, bull-like, so-called bull-like men. They're not even bulls. They're like little yapping dogs in heat. They engage in unbeneficial, horrible works meant to destroy the world. Unbeneficial, horrible works. Horrible, horrible, horrible. What do? Every horrible thing you can think of. Name one thing the materialists do that isn't horrible. Think hard. Really make your brains think. Someone may say, well, they grow vegetables. And it's horrible too. They pour all kinds of poison all over those things. The farmers themselves never eat that stuff that you eat in the store. They will never touch it. You may have seen, when you go down the road sometime, you'll see farms. And you'll see white everywhere sometime around June or so. They just put white everywhere. What is it? The most horrifying chemicals in the history of mankind. Everywhere is white. All the vegetable fields, all everything is white. And then you always see near every house there's a patch with no white. That's where they grow their own food. Yeah. Water ruined, air ruined, everything ruined. Ruined, ruined, ruined. By demons who engage in unbeneficial, horrible works. Ugra karma. Prabhavanti ugra karma na. The worst possible activities. Shayaya jagatavata. Meant to destroy the world. It's nothing new that the atomic weapons are there to blow up the world. It's nothing new. This has been going on. It's been going on since time immemorial. Horrible weapons to blow up the world. The demons feel very proud of themselves if they can blow up the world. If they can blow up the world and ruin everybody's life, they're very proud of themselves. Just like children who, when they smash something with a hammer, they look around very proud. See what I did? I broke it. Anybody can break anything. Anybody can smash anything. No problem to smash. As we all know, smashing cars left and right is our business here. It's no problem. Yeah. We have professional car smashers. Doesn't take any brain whatsoever. In fact, you just have to just close your eyes for a few seconds and poof, there it is, smashed. No problem. Yeah. But to build a car, oy, what a problem. They have to go out and buy a car, which has to take so much effort to build a car. What a problem. But that's the demon's fun. They build up empires and smash empires. Then they start all over again. Build up an empire and smash the empire. It's like the kids who build up castles and smash the castles, and they like it so much. The act of building up the castle is so much bliss because they feel like they're creating, and the act of smashing the castle is so much bliss because they feel like they're destroying. But maintaining the castle, out of the question. Maintaining it for long, not possible. What's the use of castles if you don't smash them? Build them up again. What's the use of society if you don't do like that? Just make it, break it, make it, break it. This is, Prabhupada used to call this the disease of the Western world. You Westerners, throw up a wall and smash the wall. This is going on all the time in the Western world. Prabhupada always used to note that. Devotees are expert at just building walls and then breaking them down again, putting another wall. Western disease, build it up, smash it down. No maintenance there, no goodness there. We have to learn these principles. What is a demon? And avoid it like anything. The demoniac, atheistic propaganda and energy has been pumped into our heads since time immemorial. And everybody believes it. Everybody believes it. Just like everybody believes everything that the scientists ever told them. Maybe after so much preaching, we've managed to get you to understand that life doesn't come from matter, life comes from life. But probably there's 15 other million misconceptions that everybody still believes. Because everybody just accepts whatever a scientist says must be true because he's a scientist. And factually, if you want to know what the truth is, whatever he says, don't believe it and believe the opposite, and you're closer to the truth than what he said. You're no doubt closer to the truth than what the scientist said. If you just simply believe the opposite of whatever he says, you'll probably be doing much better than just believing what he says. Nowadays, of course, a lot of people are doing that. Of course, they don't get anywhere either. Because just believing the opposite of what a fool says doesn't bring you to the truth. Because a fool can say all kinds of things, and just believing the opposite doesn't get you where you belong either. So one has to be very clever and intelligent. But who can be clever and intelligent? How can you see anything? You can't see anything in this world. One has to depend on the Vedic literatures. Therefore, the Vedic literatures give us the understanding of what we should do, when we should do it, how we should do it, how we should act, how we should think, how we should work. And when we accept those Vedic literatures for what they are, without speculation, then everything but everything becomes clear as anything. From top to bottom, clear. But those who are just simply believing anything they hear without thinking, that's not Vedic, everything becomes simply like it says here. They take shelter of insatiable lust. Every arrangement is because of lust. Every activity is made because of lust. Lust, pride, and false prestige. And to invent something new, they think, yes, we are so great. But they don't know that whatever you invent is nothing compared to what's already there in the Veda. It's nothing. Nothing at all. This Vedic science is so far beyond the slightest conception of any puny little scientist, no matter who he is. Puny, puny, puny. Little, little, little. Big deal, you can blow up the world. Great. First of all, you can't blow up the world. It's not possible, it's too big. The world will blow up you before you can blow it up. They think, we start throwing some bombs, everything will be fine. They don't know. The world is not going to tolerate that. You know, Earth, Mother Earth. Mother Earth is a personality. She doesn't tolerate when men do these things. You try and destroy the Earth is going to destroy you and every bit of remnant of your civilization. And that's just what's happening. Give it a little time. People, they think, oh, it'll be so horrible after any war or whatever because of fallout, this or that. But they don't realize it's going to be worse than that. Because Mother Earth's not going to like it at all. And they're going to have a hard time. But not devotees, you see. Devotees of the Lord have nothing to worry about. First of all, because they have some intelligence, and it is not covered by insatiable lust. They know where to go and what to do and how to act. But at the same time, Krishna protects personally all of his devotees. The Vishnudutas, the messengers of Krishna, protect the devotees so that there'll be no problem. Guaranteed. Yeah? Guaranteed. Can't be money back because you didn't give any money in the first place. But guaranteed, no problem. And guaranteed, if you're a materialist, big, heavy problem. Guaranteed. Yeah? Because that is the arrangement of God. The arrangement of the Supreme is, so long you are engaged in Krishna's service, Krishna protects you. And so long you are engaged in Maya's service, Maya destroys you. Perfect arrangement. You want to be a demon? Okay, die. Perfect arrangement. What else can we do? Huh? What else can God do? Why should He protect those who are destroying everything He made? Why in any way Krishna should protect the demons who are destroying the world? And all these so-called innocent people who follow the demons and aren't interested in changing. Even though we've told them time and time again and given them so many books. If they don't want to change, what can we do? We have to just present. But still, maybe next lifetime, they'll get a good chance. Taking all of these transcendental literatures, will next lifetime give them a good chance to go back to home, back to Godhead by taking up Krishna consciousness? Therefore, we are about to embark on a huge Christmas marathon. Huge and gigantic monster Christmas marathon. Huge, gigantic monster out of this universe Christmas marathon. Because this is the Christmas marathon before 1984. Remember that year? You heard about that year before? Yeah? Maybe you read some book by the same name? Maybe? You heard about 1984? Well, it's just 1 month away. And we ought to kick it off with a big bang. See? Big bang. Which is the Big Bang Theory of book distribution. And in the beginning, the change of the whole universe came from a big bang of books started by Srila Prabhupada. With just scattered books in all directions, which by chance landed in different homes. And then by chance, people became Krishna conscious and changed the world. But there was no chance, just like in the universal creation of the actual world, there was no chance. There's no chance. There's no chance that people take books, and there's no chance that they read them, and no chance that they go back home, back to God. No, there's every chance they go back home, back to God. But it wasn't chance that created that situation. Yeah? It is actually the perfect arrangement of the Lord that we distribute billions and trillions of books. And in this month of December, all of those of you who are distributing paraphernalia, practically you can understand it immediately that one half of everything you bring in is going to be paying for books. And the Sankirtan men have to put out tons and millions and billions of books this December. And we have a lot of them. We have a lot of them. Oh yeah. And tons of books we have already. There's no way you can distribute them all unless you really try. This is a wonderful thing, actually. It's a wonderful, glorious thing. This whole Krishna consciousness movement is wonderful and glorious, and it gets more and more wonderful and more glorious every single day. For us, everything gets more auspicious. For the materialists, everything gets worse every day. Every day they are one step closer to getting blown up, and every day we become one step closer to Krishna. And therefore, we have nothing to fear. Devotees, they just don't have that fear. Devotees only fear demons. They don't fear anything. Atomic bombs don't bother devotees somehow or another. But one demon, he can bother a devotee. Because if his hatred for Krishna, that's more dangerous in destruction than hundreds of megatons of atomic power. Because at least atomic bomb can only blow you up, big deal. You can always serve Krishna again in another body. But a demon, he hates Krishna. And if we are in the slightest way become contaminated in the slightest by that horrible, horrible person, that's the end of existence. Devotee thinks the demons are the end of existence. There's no existence beyond them. That's the lowest end. Finished. May as well be a rock. May as well turn everything into rock. And therefore, Prabhupada always used to warn us that if you leave Krishna consciousness, you will go lower than what you were before. Living like demons, you become worse than anyone who can possibly, even for a slight split millisecond, think that these activities of the demons are in any way pleasurable, any way interesting, any way attractive, is a madman. That's all. They're just rascals, hateable, nonsense, rogues, killers, destroyers, and haters of God. That we have nothing to do with those mentalities. The 16th chapter of Bhagavad Gita very starkly makes a contrast between demons and devotees. The demoniac nature is every bit of what is existing around us. And the divine nature is right here and nowhere else. Because this place and the Krishna conscious devotees are the only ones who are not overwhelmed by insatiable lust, pride, and false prestige. And just barely some of them at that. Just barely one is not overwhelmed by these things, in some cases. But when one is a real devotee, there's nothing to do with lust, nothing to do with pride, nothing to do with false prestige. Because he knows, I'm Krishna's servant. That's all. Whatever great thing I have done is not because of me. It is because of Krishna. Whatever I know is not because of me. It is because of Krishna. Krishna is great. I am small. I am his servant. That's all. Nothing more. That is a devotee. He knows what piddling little machine one might make. What is that? This is nothing compared to what Krishna is doing. This whole universe is the biggest machine in creation. And it's all flying around perfectly. Everything perfectly arranged. Try and make a machine like that. Just give it a try. You get nowhere. Krishna is so great. We are so small. We are his devotees. We do whatever Krishna wants. That is not unintelligent or robotic or lack of free will. That is perfection. Because we have surrendered out of pure love to Krishna, knowing full well that he's God. And he does what he wants anyway, at any point in time. Therefore, we want to serve him and love him and give him all pleasure in our activities because that is what we are meant to do. And therefore, to please Krishna and please spiritual master, even though we might want to sink into the mediocrity of the civilization, we break ourselves out of that demoniac mentality and kick ourselves in the rear and do a lot for Krishna and a lot more than we think we can do. This morning, I think it was, somebody was asking me, is it right that I set a quota and then pray to Krishna to reach my quota? Isn't that, after all, me demanding of Krishna that I will get so much result? Isn't that not nice? I should just try to do whatever I can do. And I said, well, whatever you say your quota is, Krishna's quota is much higher for you than that. You make your quota 1,000 books a week, well, Krishna has a quota much more than that. And so if you're just trying to do 1/3 of Krishna's quota, what's the big deal if you're praying to Krishna to help you? Krishna's quota for you is 10,000 books a day. And your quota for you is 220 or 50 or 100. And you're very proud of your quota. You don't know. Krishna wants everything out of you. He wants everything. Whatever you think your quota is, you can, you know, do it by 100 times and you might be near what Krishna's quota for you is. One has to surrender. Give up this conception. I'm the doer. I'm the enjoyer. I am the intelligent one. I am the knower. See how expert I am? Give up this conception. And give up any other idea, too.
One has only one purpose.
And that one purpose is to perform his particular mission, which he's been given with full enthusiasm, dedication, devotion, and love. We are an army. We are not just a little bunch of people got together to have a party. This is an army marching against the demons.
smashing their heads. We don't like demons. We don't like their civilization. We don't have anything to do with their civilization. We want to crush their civilization. We're an army. We don't mess around. We're not playing games. We're here to crush the demoniac civilization. Crush it. You understand? What crush means? Destroy it. With books. And that is what we're going to do. And you're going to do it. You understand how important your mission is? Every single person here is a part of that army marching over the heads of the demons.